Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week, we'll look at a news story which has a direct relevance to the beautiful religion of Islam, and we'll break it down from a Muslim perspective. Today, we're going to examine the attempt by Western societies to impose LGBTQ ideology onto Muslims. Islam has a very clear prohibition on homosexual acts. But despite this, Western nations have been trying to persuade Muslims to abandon their principles. And pro-LGBTQ propaganda is nowhere more evident than in the school system, as the following report explains.
A new challenge faces religious communities in the Western world. A push to introduce controversial same-sex relationship education material onto children at state schools. The issue has become such a hot-button topic that protests have flared up across Britain and in the US in recent years, with a recent example taking place in South Wales.
Please let children be children, say no to our SE and save our children.
Although the issue has upset religious Jewish and Christian communities, Muslims have made the biggest push to challenge what's being described as LGBT indoctrination in primary schools. Back in 2019, UK cities witnessed protest after a UK Birmingham school's introduction of a pro-LGBT curriculum called No Outsiders. In 2021, parents in East London condemned their local school for allegedly sexualizing children with a relationship and sex education lesson, or RSE, which also included same-sex narratives. And in October 2022, hundreds of parents protested in Michigan, USA, over a local school's use of LGBT books. Back in Britain, a school in England's West Midlands sparked a row after inviting a self-described gay Muslim to address Muslim students. His visit was challenged by students and parents. Supporters of the lesson say it's about combating intolerance towards the gay community. However, religious communities say they have a right to practice their faith and raise their children with their own values.
Well, joining us in the studio today to talk about Western nations and LGBTQ propaganda is Shakil Afsar, an activist from Birmingham in the UK, where he closely was involved in protests against LGBTQ teaching in primary schools. And joining us on Skype from Iraq is Sheikh Jafar Ladak, an Islamic scholar and the Imam of Bab al-Ilm Centre in Leeds. Thank you very much for joining us on the show, Shakil. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, just tell me, let's go back, 2019, I think it was, the issue in Birmingham. There was a massive protest movement with Muslims up there. Tell me your experience.
Well, to be honest, it was a group of parents who were just standing up and asking for the same privilege the LGBT community have been fighting, well, apparently fighting for many years. Parents were only reiterating the fact that their children are very young, that this is a very sensitive subject, and that the fact that they feel that their religious, moral and philosophical convictions are being watered down. My actual feeling towards this all was there was a barbaric amount of discrimination from the LGBT community towards these innocent parents who were only standing and trying to defend the innocence of their children. It was so bad to the point where we were labelled extremists, we were labelled bigots. People were being stopped and, you know, questioned on what jobs they do, where they do, being referred to prevent. It was an absolutely dreadful time.
So basically, for expressing your freedom of speech, for your own views on the subject, parents were being branded extremists and terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a group of people who are claiming equality, but then are completely disallowing what we believe. They claim tolerance, but are being completely intolerant towards our beliefs. We have never, as people from Birmingham and parents, I can vouch that we have never questioned the rights or wrongs of homosexuality. According to our religion, is forbidden, but we have never questioned these people. We have never asked them to stop what they're doing. We are merely and are still asking them to stop indoctrinating our children and pushing their world views on our innocent, young, innocent minds. You know, if it was they were a bit older, we would have enough time to educate our children about Islam or Christianity or any other Abrahamic faith. But the fact that this is being pushed, I do actually believe that there is a bigger agenda to water down our religious values of British Muslims. And this is in overdrive. It's complete overdrive.
And obviously this was the No Outsiders initiative, which was being pushed into schools in Birmingham.
Absolutely.
Which was mentioned in the report.
Absolutely.
What kind of stuff was going on in No Outsiders?
Well, look, young Muslim children whose parents are praying namaz five times a day, the children were coming home with books such as Princess Boy, which would suggest a transgender lifestyle, a boy dressing as a girl being acceptable. Mm. Parents were horrified. These are parents who wake up at the crack of dawn to, you know, pray to their Lord, ask for forgiveness and try to be good, peaceful human beings. And their children are coming home with books that are completely contradictory to everything that their religion says.
I think one thing that bothers a lot of parents as well is the fact that it's introduced in primary school. So it's quite a young age we're dealing
with.
I think a lot of parents were saying like they didn't want any relationship education at that age, regardless of same gender or not. Before we carry on the talk, Shaquille, let's bring in another voice onto this issue. We have a Sheikh Jaffa Ladak coming to us via Skype from Iraq. Welcome to the show, Sheikh. Thank you for joining us. First of all, why are Muslim parents so upset by this RSE curriculum, in your view? What's the big issue?
The development of a child goes through stages. And there are times in which a child is capable of understanding something fully, where a child has to learn something at a preparatory stage, and other times when a child cannot be talked to about certain things because the mind is maybe ill-prepared or immature to be able to understand what it's being told or the images that it's consuming. And we know that from all sorts of social studies. If you show children acts of violence, for example, they think that this is normal and they will adopt those actions without realizing the consequences of it. If a child sees another child pulling someone's hair or hitting someone, and they're not taught that these behaviors are not correct, when they adopt these for themselves, it becomes part and parcel of whom they are. In the same way, of course, every human being has innate nature, desires, curiosities. The fear that many parents have is, along with the decoupling of traditional moral understanding, the fear that parents have is that certain educational ideas are keeping content, especially same-sex content, content for exploring one's body, being able to be completely free and open in children when they are not yet mature enough to understand the content or the consequences of those content. And as a result, parents are protesting. Parents are pulling their children out of school. Some parents are even leaving the country out of fear of what the medium to long-term moral situation of the country will be like.
Another example of what's been going on is an effort that was made last year at a UK school to essentially reinterpret the Quran from a pro-LGBT position. Is there any room for debate on this subject, Sheikh?
The Quran places the identity of a human being in relationship to his creator, God Almighty. As an example, we get this from the verses that speak about the Mi'raj, the ascension of the blessed Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and his noble family, where the verse says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Subhanalladhi asra bi'abdihi layla min al-masjid harami ila al-masjid al-aqsa. That blessed is he, the Prophet, the servant of Allah who went on this journey. The point is that even the peak of creation, the best of creation, was referred to as his identity as a servant of God alone. What we're seeing here is that some of these movements are seeking to shift the identity of a person and subsume them either within a sexual identity or within a gender-based identity, or even sometimes based on pronouns, sometimes even further, God forbid, people are identifying themselves as animals and things like this. So from the Islamic perspective, our identity is not one that is created and shaped and reshaped by social ideals of the time. We have this until today. this might be a little bit controversial, but try to understand it. When we say, I am white, or I am black, or I am brown, there is no such thing. It's just the melatonin of my skin, right? There's no such thing as a black person or a white person per se. It's just the melatonin or lack thereof in my skin. There's no such thing as a Pakistani or an Iraqi or an Arab. These are social terms that we have created for ourselves. In Islam, our identity is related to God. Our identity is related to our religion. And so when a Muslim or non-Muslim comes forward and says that I can be this type of person or I can be that type of person, I have to think about whether this is social conditioning or whether this is actually something that is within the framework of the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him and his family. And those who try to start by saying, I am this type of Muslim, or I am with these sorts of pronouns, we have to recognize that these things are social constructs. They have no value in and of themselves, and sometimes they're actually in direct conflict with Islam. I would argue that in this case, when this person came and said, I am a gay Muslim, to place the idea of his sexuality and his gayness or his lust for fellow men ahead of his Islam, or to subsume his Islam within that identity, is something that is not acceptable within Islam and actually goes against Islam.
And finally, given that the UK is a secular country, should Western Muslims be more tolerant of this type of education, would you say, Sheikh?
But if a society is truly secular, then it allows for that space for there to be sort of a battleground of ideas, a marketplace of ideas. And if one group of people want to be able to put forward their ideas as robustly as they are, and we can see in the LGBTQ community that you know, that it's being supported to the tune of hundreds of millions of pounds. It's being supported with a great amount of media landscape. Then from the same perspective, it's truly a secular society, and truly it should be a marketplace of ideas. The traditional values of religion and family and the evidences these communities have on this side should be as forthcoming and as welcomed as any other sort of idea. I should feel free to be able to put forth my understanding of this matter as well as somebody else. But the fear that we have at the moment, that many Muslims have, is that if they speak about their traditional family values, about their religious values, starting from the perspective of God, what is right, what is wrong morally, the Muslim society at the moment feels very shut down. In fact, it actually feels under threat.
Well, thank you very much, Sheikh. We'll have to leave it there for now. But thank you for joining us via Skype, and apologies for any technical issues that occurred during the talk. Well, before we continue this discussion, let's take a look at what people on the streets of London have to say about this.
I don't think it's appropriate to put LGBT into the curriculum. I think there are far more important things than LGBT. Teaching children at an early age about gender is quite confusing for them. And because the child's brain doesn't develop till the age of 27. So there's a lot of confusion that can take place. So why not teach them how to look after themselves, nutrition, teach them how to cook, yeah? Teach them how to look after their money, teach them about finance, teach them about the big wider world, which is far more important.
If they're at a young age, I'm against it, of course, because the children, they don't have right for like having an opinion, so they have like their parents that support or against it, so they should take their parents' permission before asking or pursuing any of that in the education system. It shouldn't be like taught straight to kids without the consent or any form of agreement from the parents.
Personally, I don't think so, especially at like primary school level. I don't think it's necessary. Maybe a little bit older to understand what's happening and that there are people like that, but I don't think, especially as young children.
I disagree with them, especially in the primary school. They start to teach them, taught them from reception, maybe nursery. Yeah, I was working in a nursery and they started the big well, they say it like a rule or regular to do it, but I disagree with them. It's still a small children. They can't make their own decision. They should be like maybe bigger enough. If some child asks, maybe they can answer him. But if not, why you put these children in this situation? I don't like it. I disagree with it. 100%.
I don't think it's appropriate because they're really young, and also some people are different religions and they don't agree with this stuff and they're still talking about it. So I think it's a bit rude that they're talking about it when everybody doesn't agree with this. I was taught about it, I think, 2 months ago. I felt a bit awkward since I'm a Muslim. I don't agree with this type of stuff. And they kept talking about it, saying that we should be nice about it. Obviously, we should, but it just felt really awkward in the situation.
In an apparent effort to tarnish parent protests, media pundits and LGBT activists have described critics as radical extremists. However, it isn't Muslims only who are concerned by this issue, as a British Jewish activist made clear to us earlier on.
Jewish people are generally very, very concerned about this. I live myself in Gated, and I actually admire you very much that you're actually involved in this. It's a very, very important thing. And what I want to point out as a Jewish person, this is not just a Jewish issue. And I want to speak, before I speak, I'll give a disclaimer, and then I'll show you how. I'm not representing an organization. I'm not representing any other person other than myself. But on the other hand, I am representing humanity. This is not just a religious issue. This is an issue which is literally an issue which affects humanity. Anybody who can speak up is speaking up for humanity. He's not speaking up necessarily. He's speaking up for religion. He's speaking up for God. Yes, but he's speaking up for humanity. And this also puts into question a very, very, very big, in a very big way, that until now, the narrative they've been giving us is that they're doing this because they're concerned about terrorism and extremism. This, they cannot say this anymore, because even the doctors who were told that they were actually going to be teaching this stuff, most of the doctors were not interested.
Well, we're going to head back to the discussion now of our in-studio guest, Shaquille. So, Shaquille, we heard from people from the streets of London. It seems to me as if a lot of parents, particularly, are just kind of creeped out by the idea that kids so young are being introduced to any kind of relationship education, let alone this particular same-gender identity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, a parent, especially the mother, bears this child with the most excruciating pain, and then the fact that that child's is her responsibility to nurture physically, nurture mentally. If there's any issue with that child, she will be responsible. But when that mother becomes concerned about her child's mental welfare, the things that her child is learning, and then the fact that it could put the child in a worse position, she's completely disallowed and called a radical, called an extremist. And this is a woman who has bared this child through the most excruciating pain any human body could endure. And then, you know, it's absolutely discrimination, open discrimination.
And I think that another strange aspect to all this is the fact that basically the state is intervening to teach other people's kids about relationships and so on, when the parents don't even seem to be consulted. Were the parents being consulted in Birmingham?
This is where the major issue started for us in the city of Birmingham, was the fact that young children were coming home with sensitive books like Princess Boy, like my cha-cha, which means my uncle in Asian, is gay. Parents were, you know, horrified. Parents were very concerned that the fact that RSE has a 52-page guidance sheet, no curriculum has a 52-page guidance sheet, yet RSE comes with a 52-page guidance sheet teaching the people who will be delivering it how to do it, how to be mindful, how to keep age appropriateness to account, and moreover, consultations. People in sensitive areas must be consulted, but no. Any parent that speaks up is labelled an extremist. And I'm very glad that you posted this video about walking around the streets, because we did the same thing with one of the mainstream channels, and they didn't air it. Every person they were questioning, majority of them being English Christian or English people, and they categorically said, no, primary school is not the age to be teaching such sensitive subjects to any child. You know, let them be innocent. Let them have that right to be children. We're moving sexualization from the back of the child's mind right to the front at such an age when UK has synonymously known to have underage pregnancies. UK, you know, it's all, the evidence is there, yet they continue to push it. They continue to force it, majority on ethnic minority and people of Abrahamic faiths.
It is interesting. Public opinion does seem to have a massive appetite for debating this issue at the very least.
Absolutely.
A recent petition got well over 100,000 signatures, and it was calling for a ban of LGBT relationship education in the RSE curriculum. Let me quickly ask you about the media reaction that you received. You was a big activist in Birmingham at the time.
Yeah.
How did the media treat you?
The media completely vilified me. Every single report or any single interview that I did, at a point I had to get my own teams recording it because of the fact of how much was being chopped and changed. I was smeared to be some sort of criminal. I was smeared to be bringing gangs of mobs of people. And these are brothers and sisters of the children who are at the school. These are mothers and fathers, uncles, grandparents of the children who are at the school. And, you know, they've completely vilified me to the point where I had police markers on my car. I had police markers on my children's school. A lot of people completely disallowed the fact when I said, I have children of my own. On this particular school, it was my niece and nephew, which are as good as my children. But I have kids on my own. I know how a parent feels when your child is being indoctrinated so, you know, viciously. You know, it wasn't even a subtle. It was a vicious indoctrination. Mm. You are a girl today, or you can maybe be a boy tomorrow. This was the level the schools were going. And there is, unfortunately, a massive LGBT extremist lobby. Now, for me personally, as a parent, I don't mind what people do in the comfort of their own homes, as long as they don't enforce that on me. Mm. But there is an extremist lobby which is lobbying around majority Muslim areas. We are the only last religion who are keeping their morals intact, who are keeping their philosophical convictions intact, and will not bend them. Yes. But effectively, what the state is doing is teaching Muslim children. When you say to a Muslim child, it's okay to be homosexual, it's equivalent to teaching them it's okay to eat pork, or it's okay to drink alcohol, or it's okay to commit fornication without, being in the confines of marriage. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, because obviously it's supposed to be a secular society in the sense that you have a right to practice your faith without someone forcing their views down your throat.
Absolutely.
And it seems strange to me as well that you have the LGBT side of the argument claiming that actually it's religion forcing their views onto the LGBT community. But actually, it appears that this is the reverse case, where actually they're forcing their views onto our kids.
Absolutely.
And trying to get kids being taught by teachers and strangers, essentially. Shaquille, I'm going to have to end it there because we have run out of time, but I really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much.
And yes, thank you to everyone at home, and thank you to the guests, of course. For now, that's it, but we will be back next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. Salaamu Alaikum for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the U.S., companies such as Amazon, Disney, and Walmart have funded Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has imposed curbs on teaching about race in Florida's schools. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Political activists in Florida have condemned the hypocrisy of large corporations that use Black History Month to denounce racism while donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to the state's right-wing governor, Ron DeSantis. Amazon, AT&T, Comcast, Disney, and Walmart are among the companies that publicly proclaimed their commitment to anti-racist values, especially after the 2020 police murder of George Floyd, an African-American man in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But research by the Center for Political Accountability, a non-profit organization that tracks corporate political spending, shows that these same businesses donated directly and indirectly to the 2022 re-election campaign of Ron DeSantis, who has imposed limits on how race and racism can be taught in Florida schools. These corporations can say that they stand with the Black community, but then also fund the governor and his work around dismantling Black history, said Jasmine Burney Clark, founder of Equal Ground, a progressive group based in Orlando, Florida. Jasmine Burney Clark added, "It's a huge level of hypocrisy. American corporations have increasingly taken a stand on social and racial justice issues in recent years, and often see Black History Month as an ideal opportunity to promote themselves. Many express solidarity on social media or tout programs within the company to highlight the contributions of Black employees. Amazon, AT&T, Coca-Cola, Comcast, DoorDash, General Motors, and Walmart have all made public statements in celebration of Black History Month. Google posted online on 1st of February, "Learn how Google is recognizing and celebrating Black voices, joy, and success this Black History Month." But the Center for Political Accountability found that each of these companies donated significant sums of money to political groups that prominently supported Ron DeSantis. Disney writes on its resource website, "During Black History Month in February, the Disney Parks blog will celebrate Black stories and highlight special experiences at Disneyland Resort and Walt Disney World Resort." Yet early in the election cycle, and before its relationship with Ron DeSantis fully soured, Disney contributed as much as $50,000 to its re-election campaign and $125,000 to the Republican Party of Florida, which supported his campaign and inauguration. Ron DeSantis has sought to position himself on the front lines of American culture wars as he considers a 2024 bid for the White House and tries to outflank former President Donald Trump, the only official well-known candidate so far. Earlier this month, the second-term governor announced plans to block state colleges from having programs on diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as critical race theory, or CRT, which examines the ways in which racism was embedded into American law and other modern institutions, maintaining the dominance of white people. The DeSantis administration also blocked a new advanced placement course on African-American studies from being taught in high schools, saying it violates state law and is historically inaccurate. In the new framework, topics including Black Lives Matter, reparations, and queer theory are not part of the exam. And last year, Ron DeSantis signed the Stop Woke Act that restricts certain race-based conversations and analysis in schools and businesses. The law bars instruction that defines people as necessarily oppressed or privileged based solely on their race. The governor has imposed sweeping restrictions on books in public schools, forcing some teachers to remove books from their libraries or use paper to cover up their shelves. They face felony charges if unsanctioned books are present in their classrooms. The implications reach far beyond Florida. At least 25 states have considered legislation or other steps to limit how race can be taught in schools, according to an analysis by Education Week. 8 states have banned or limited the teaching of critical race theory or similar concepts through laws or administrative actions. Jasmine Burney Clark said, "This man is attempting to be president of the United States. We could draw the line right now. These corporations had the true capacity and not the performative capacity to do that." Last year, Disney, under pressure from consumers and its own staff, took a stance against Florida's Don't Say Gay law, which bars instruction on gender identity in kindergarten through third grade, as well as lessons deemed not age-appropriate. Ron DeSantis sought retribution, and last week Florida Republicans approved proposals to strip the company of its self-governing status in Walt Disney World's Reedy Creek Improvement District. But Jasmine Burney Clark urged companies not to be intimidated. "Disney, unfortunately, is going through a difficult time at the moment, but has the power and capacity to be doing more than they're actually doing right now." The American newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has leaned hard into educational issues as he burnishes his national profile ahead of a potential White House bid, and conservatives love what they see. DeSantis, who last year won re-election by the largest margin for a Florida governor in decades, has secured GOP plaudits for moves ranging from his reopening of schools during the coronavirus pandemic to his recent skirmish with the College Board over an advanced placement African-American studies course. Now he's the only Republican polling alongside, or in some cases even ahead of, former President Donald Trump for the party's presidential nomination. "The party should be open to looking at a different candidate. DeSantis is in the strongest position," said David McIntosh, president of the Conservative Club for Growth. It remains to be seen if Ron DeSantis' moves on education would prove as popular with the voters at large as they are with the congressional Republicans and Fox News hosts. But he has, without question, made the issue one of the key components of his brand.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello. Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaran Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications.
In Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports. Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least five mines in Fars province.
Istiqlal Abade Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has three factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries.
The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials such as fire clay meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market.
Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports compose some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops. Tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country.
The platform is called Bita. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Bita digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFT that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you right here next time for another edition of Bazaar.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Iran's president, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, seeks to operationalize a 25-year partnership agreement with China during his state visit to Beijing, the president's deputy chief of staff for political affairs has said. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote in this regard, at the invitation of Chinese President Xi Jinping, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi paid a visit to China. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Chunying announced recently. Analysts said that Raisi's first visit to China since taking office in